more than bananas, how the Christian faith works for me and the whole universe. Episode 15. The King is among us. Before he left for heaven, Jesus promised that he would not leave us as orphans. He had reasons for saying this. First, he wasn't leaving at all. He was taking up his throne and beginning to reign. He has not gone anywhere except to reign as king today. Second, he sent the Holy Friend, with him inside us and with the companionship of prayer available to us. We can hardly be said to have been left to fly solo. 3. Christ haunts the human species. He's sneaked his way into the Quran. Many Hindus worship him, admittedly often alongside others they also call gods. Over the previous 2 or 3 centuries, continents have turned to him. Europe has been notionally Christian for more than 1,000 years. The Americas for several hundred. Sub-Saharan Africa became majority Christian in the 20th century, and in the past 40 years, perhaps 100 million Chinese and rising have embraced the Christian faith. Fourth, he told us how he was going to work until the human species and the whole earth were ready for harvesting. This explains the world we now see. It also points up how we can live lovely and meaningful lives, even within the world's now and future messy state. While still on earth, Christ told a set of stories to show what kind of king he was going to be, the parables of the kingdom. When we look at what he said, it's a bit of a relief because it explains how the world and the church can be as they are, and King Jesus can still be king, which otherwise might seem very unlikely. Here are some of the features. Kingdom things start small. Jesus used pictures of microscopic things like a mustard seed or a grain of yeast that can have huge impact. Given time and a little moisture, a pinch of yeast can create any amount of bread or beer, for example. An oak tree, as it is said, is just a nut that wouldn't give up. Jesus' kingdom did not start with a continent-wide coordinated advertising campaign, but with 12 people who quickly turned to 11 after one became corrupt. Yet by the time the Roman emperors started becoming Christians, 3 centuries later, half the empire was Christian and pagan temples were closing for lack of interest. So it should be no surprise to us that at any given moment kingdom things might look irrelevant and things ranged against them look impregnable. As king, Jesus is happy to start small. The sound of pruning shears is never far away. Not only do kingdom things start small, they're often cut back when they get too big. Next to the primary school in the small West Yorkshire village where I grew up was a church that could seat hundreds of people. 100 metres up the road was another one, even larger. The nearby town had several more such hulking wrecks. One of these church buildings has been converted and now claims to be the biggest curry house in the world. I grew up surrounded by vast empty churches. Charlotte Bronte's novel, Shirley, was set in a grand house near to this same village, and it portrays a world just 2 centuries in the past, but spiritually on a different planet. Neighbours casually discuss theology over a garden fence, for example. That basically never happened when I was growing up. And unlike 2 centuries ago, one of the problems the local authorities do not face today, though it happened in Shirley, are volatile crowds of unwashed Methodists turning ugly on a church day out. Today's Methodists, some of them my former Sunday school teachers, would sadly be hard-pressed to form a crowd in the village without bussing in further Methodists from elsewhere. Also, in general, they're more likely to go to a tea shop than turn volatile. Even a century later, the Edwardians who built the streets in the nearby town named them after preachers. That doesn't happen today either. My experience is typical, I think, to be English, is to live among the lumbering, empty monuments of a much more Christian-looking past. This is depressing if you're a Christian, except when you realise it is just Jesus doing what he has been doing throughout the previous 15 centuries or so of English Christianity. It's always ebbed and flowed, been pruned and grown back. A deep cutting down of the church's size and influence is quite normal, even seasonal. Slums, not state visits. When you become king, you have choices about how you're going to work. You might like to go on state visits and hold high-level summits with other world leaders. Or you may prefer to visit local slums. King Jesus is definitely of the local slum persuasion. He was that way during his time on earth, seemingly spending disproportionate amounts of time with beggars and lepers and with the physically and spiritually infirm. His church, to an extent, continues that tradition. It's not surprising that none of this makes the headlines. The quiet and the good don't. Slow. The work of God's kingdom, Jesus taught, would be slow. Like the slow food movement, seasonal, patient, waiting for things to grow and ripen. You only enter it as a little child. A right heart is given more weight than goals or milestones. It's a power-stripped, vulnerable kingdom. It's inefficient, spending too much time seeking out one lost sheep rather than simply accepting a 1% wastage in a flock of 100. It finds roles for the infirm and the limited. Not too much of this is spectacular. To paraphrase a too triumphalistic hymn, like a mighty tortoise moves the church of God. Brothers, we're plodding where the saints did plod. Again, slow doesn't make the headlines. It just shifts mountains eventually. Both good and evil are active forces in our world. In other parables of the kingdom, Jesus warned that evil would be an active force in our world right to the end. He wouldn't stamp it out early. This is not something we are mentally prepared for, but we need to be because it helps explain the world. How did it happen, for example, that two countries such as England and Germany, so similar in history, so intertwined by trade, culture, invention and marriage, came to a point only two generations ago when they were dropping bombs indiscriminately on each other's cities? Evil boiled over is how it happened, a pattern that seems to recur as generations follow each other. Why does the Western world, in which I'm a tax-paying, voting citizen and so bear some responsibility, still stop African farmers exporting us their food, sell guns to repressive dictatorships, and run submarines with weapons designed to kill millions of civilians? That would be because evil has been sown among us and we have let it grow. Does King Jesus approve? I think not. Does he abolish it on the spot? No. Possibly because if he did, he would have to abolish us at the same time. So an evil world is no proof that Jesus is not king. It is merely proof that King Jesus is patient. Of course, exactly the same principle holds with the Christian church as a whole, which is why criticisms of it miss the mark. Did the church launch the Crusades? Certainly. Both oppose and sustain scientific inquiry? Absolutely. Fight both for and against racism and sexism? Exploit and serve the poor? Of course. Will it always be so? Yes, until the harvest. So good and evil are both yeasty and active until the end. The continued existence of a bad world and a compromised church doesn't mean God isn't at work in it. It rather means we're all in process together. It won't get sorted out until the end. Jesus pointed this out often with different pictures. A net full of fish is dragged to shore, then sorted between the good and the bad. A harvest is gathered, then winnowed. The chaff is burnt, the wheat is kept. Sheep and goats will be divided. Up till then, it's a mixture. We need to watch and pray. We can find ourselves on either side. Familiarity with the King is not the same as obedience to him. All of this points to how Christ's kingdom can be at work in a world we recognise. The King is among us, really. And because of that, we can suggest how to live good lives in this mixed up world in the next episode.